This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Oceania, vast part of the planet, Pacific Ocean, Indian Ocean. Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies is in Bali, that's Indonesia, looking at several stories continuing in the contest for the game of islands between the People's Republic of China and its wish to build a structure that can blunt the U.S. and its allies in the event of conflict. But in any event, we're looking at many sovereignties and many different tales. China's present, the U.S. can be present, so can its ally Australia and New Zealand. Cleo, a very good day to you. I begin with Papua New Guinea, which is neighbor to Indonesia. You're in Bali, Indonesia. And Papua New Guinea has recently been visited by what looks to be a VIP cavalcade. Not only the President of France, Mr. Macron, and the Secretary of Defense, Mr. Austin, but also calls by other dignitaries for some time representing India, certainly China, certainly Australia. All this attention for Papua New Guinea, the capital, which is Port Moresby. I read in The Economist that one wag in Papua New Guinea has said, "Think of two elephants fighting over a tuft of grass. We're the tuft of grass." Good day to you, Cleo. What is vital to the U.S., to China, to Australia, to India, to France in Papua New Guinea? Good evening.
Good evening. Well, break out your World War II map all over again. This is the site of the Battle of Bougainville, for example. Several other kind of key turning points. As you mentioned, it's not that far from Australia. It's also on the lead up as you're heading from the Pacific Ocean into the Indian Ocean, which is one of the reasons why the Indians are concerned. But it's also very, very rich in resources. It has fossil fuels. It has minerals. We tend to think of the Pacific Islands as small, but Papua New Guinea has a larger landmass and a larger population than New Zealand, and it's much more strategically located. So, we tend to think about New Zealand as being a relatively important country in the region, but the reasons for that are largely historic and to be blunt, kind of ethnic. They're this white colonial outpost in the Pacific. But if you're just looking at actual facts on the ground, resources, population, land size, strategic location, Papua New Guinea pops to the fore as a place that is very important, and the leaders in Papua New Guinea know it.
It begins, looking at the VIP list, to look like Papua New Guinea's getting a rush to go one way or another. I noted that India is involved. There are two warships there, for example. But in May, the Prime Minister, Mr. Modi, called in Papua New Guinea. In July, the Prime Minister of Indonesia, Widodo, called in New Guinea. Mr. Biden was scheduled to call in Papua New Guinea, but that was canceled because of domestic matters at home. I mentioned Mr. Austin was there, and the Chinese have always had an interest. So the question is, what is to be done with this interest of these wide-ranging, sometimes allies, sometimes opponent? What does Papua New Guinea want out of this? Money? Influence, capital structures?
So as it happens, I was at an event here in Indonesia where there were representatives from Papua New Guinea as well. And what they were very clear about is what they really need is economic development. They have very high youth unemployment rates, including for their university graduates, something like 30% of university graduates can't get a job. It is a complex, multi-ethnic society that has a lot of resources that haven't been properly exploited, at least not for the benefit of the population. And so you're seeing things like now there's a monopoly on domestic fuel. This company called Puma Energy, which is, I think, actually out of Switzerland, and they've just put a cap on the amount of fuel that's being that's working in the country, possibly because they've got a foreign exchange issue with the bank. I mean, it's all these kind of monopolies jostling with each other. But the end result is that they've been having to stop internal flights because they don't have the fuel for the internal flights, and the country has declared a state of emergency. And, you know, so they have all of these kind of serious problems that are putting a chokehold on economic development. In a place that just over 20 years ago had very serious violence, especially around Bougainville, what's now the autonomous region of Bougainville, wanting independence. And there's a concern that that might flare up again, especially if times are desperate. So what do they want? They want stable economic development, jobs for the youth in particular, and a direction that leads them towards more internal stability, security, and prosperity, which would, of course, benefit the entire region if that can be pulled off.
James Marape is the prime minister. Do they enjoy being the bell at the ball? I note that the largest Japanese warship, Izumo, called. I note that the Royal Navy sent Tamar. I note that the French Navy sent La Glorieuse. They also sent their president. So is this an advantage for Papua New Guinea in the region or in any fashion dealing with the world?
It is, but I think that they see what all of those partners want, which is that the kind of military engagement. But again, what they want is the economic engagement. Our definition of security, which is this hard military security, isn't theirs. Theirs is economic security. And, with more economic security, they can fend off at least one of the elephants, the kind of the predatory engagement that you'd see from China, for example. And that's why the Indian visit was particularly interesting. Yes, they sent a couple of warships, but as you mentioned, Prime Minister Modi himself went to Papua New Guinea in May, and he had a quite an interesting itinerary planned, a 2-3 day visit with a very large contingent of Indian business sector that was supposed to come and engage. And at the same time, the Indians also had invited leaders from all of the Pacific Island countries, paid their way to come to Papua New Guinea for a big, what's called FIPIC, which is a meeting between the Indians and the Pacific Islanders. It's their kind of bilateral or way of reaching into the region. And what happened was, again, as you mentioned, out of nowhere, President Biden announced that he was going to be visiting PNG on the same day that Prime Minister Modi was going to be visiting PNG. So he was kind of going to crash the photo op that Modi had arranged and paid for. And then at the last minute, President Biden canceled and Secretary Blinken went instead. And in all of this, the Indians ended up having to scale back their delegation. So their business sector didn't go. Now, I understand that they're still trying to do that business engagement, which, again, is what PNG wants more than the warships. They want, the investors and the bankers and the accountants and the small business people and the healthcare providers and the education providers. And they prefer a flotilla of small business owners than a carrier strike group. So we'll see who actually ends up providing the kind of security that PNG wants and needs. But I think that in the meantime, the leadership in PNG is very aware that if, the bigger players want to show off their boats in port, then that's fine. And if that ultimately gets them some of the economic security they need, then they're willing to welcome them in.
The Japanese invasion fleet, April, May of 1942, on its way to Port Moresby, intercepted by the Yorktown and the Lexington, the Battle of Coral Sea. So connect the map here. Papua New Guinea, Port Moresby, the Coral Sea, right up adjacent to the Solomon Islands group, Guadalcanal. The Solomon Islands recently seen Sogavari, the prime minister, in Beijing, even more recently in the news because Carolyn Kennedy and her grandson, I believe, her son, Jack, 29 years old, swam the nearly two and a half miles that the progenitor of the Kennedy story, John Kennedy, swam in 1943, 80 years later. Is that significant to the Solomon Islands? Because it's now through the person of Sogavare entirely in the Chinese camp? Does the rest of the Solomons pay attention to these details?
I think that, you know, it's definitely good that she visited. She's currently ambassador to Australia. And by the nature of bureaucracies, when you get a major visit like that, both bureaucracies need to learn more about each other so that the trip goes smoothly. So more in the U.S. State Department would be detailed to understanding or looking at the situation in the Solomons, and awareness is helpful. On the other side, yes, Prime Minister Sogavare was just in China. When he landed in China, he actually said, and it's available on tape, you can see it online, it's good to be home, which isn't particularly encouraging. And then when he came back to Solomons, he mentioned that, you know, if there's an issue of domestic unrest, of course, he'll call Australia and New Zealand first. But if they're slow to respond, China is only a 9-hour flight away. That's a kind of disconcerting precision. And he was in China for a long time, for a week, which is a very long time for that sort of a visit. So you have to kind of, and he's already delayed elections once, so you have to wonder what's going on. But in the context of Ambassador Kennedy's visit, I think the State Department was pleased that she did meet with Sogavare. Sogavare did not attend the major commemoration of the Battle of Guadalcanal that happened last summer. She was there for that, and so was Wendy Sherman, and he didn't attend that, but he did meet with her this time. Personally, I think that at this point in the Solomons, it's gone beyond the person of the Prime Minister, and China has already put in place whoever they would like to replace him if he doesn't deliver. So if he does start to try to shift away from China, I think he'll suddenly start to find a lot of domestic opposition, also Chinese back, to try to displace him. China's gotten its grips on substantial parts of the system as a whole, so the individual is becoming less important if you're looking at how to give the people of the Solomon Islands the election that is theirs by right. It's going to take a lot more than just appeasing Prime Minister Sogavare at this point.
Check, counter-check for the route between the U.S. and its ally Australia. We're moving to other sovereign powers where the game of islands continues between the People's Republic of China and the U.S. and its allies. Cleo Pascal of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy is traveling in Oceania. She's in Bali, Indonesia. We're headed to Nauru. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.